Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, more pressure being applied to folks who love Confederate statues. They are coming down in city after city. The walls are coming tumbling down. Baltimore's Mayor Catherine Pugh will join us to talk about her decision to remove four statues in her city in the dead of night. Donald Trump is facing a major backlash from some surprising groups over his failure to denounce white supremacists following the violence in Charlottesville. CEOs of the military are saying enough is enough. They're taking strong stances against hate. We will explain. Also, folks, on the show, I'll talk to Bree Newsom. Remember, she's the sister who climbed the pole in South Carolina to remove the Confederate flag. We'll talk about what's taking place around this country, the targeting, if you will, of Confederate statues, and how in North Carolina they're arresting folks there for toppling a statue, yet the folks who beat the brother in Virginia are still free. And a big memorial service yesterday for Heather Heyer. We'll bring you the powerful words of her family and friends. As Heather herself said, quote, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention." And how come the Trump administration is cutting funding for groups pushing back against white extremism? We'll talk with Congressman Emanuel Cleaver of Kansas City. Plus, we'll talk to Jason Williams, of course, former NBA star, about his new television show, Rebound, and how he is putting his life back together. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Well, folks, that's all that's left of the Robert E. Lee and Thomas Stonewall Jackson statue in Baltimore, Maryland, a graffiti-covered pedestal where the monument dedicated to the Confederate leaders once stood. Just a couple of days ago, around 2 a.m., dozens of city workers removed four statues. Baltimore is just one of many cities to quickly remove Confederate statues just days after the deadly violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. Joining us right now via the phone is Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh. Mayor, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Good morning. How are you?
Great. Why'd you make the decision to remove this at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Well, actually, it started at about 11:30 p.m. because I didn't want to attract any violence, didn't want to attract any crowds. I thought enough speeches had been made, enough grandstanding had taken place, and it was really important. I said to folks, if you really want to hear a great speech and reasoning for removing the statues, you can listen to the speech of Mayor Landrieu. I thought it was appropriate because this way we didn't have to be bothered with traffic or anything like that, and it was absolutely the right thing to do.
And, of course, did you consult with Mayor Landrieu? The reason I say that is because in New Orleans, when they did removed it, they had folks who were wearing, body armor. There were people who were concerned with their safety, and there were all kinds of threats to people who were actually removing those statues.
Well, that's why I had talked to Mayor Landrieu when I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors in June and talked about what they had gone through and a lot of the hate that was taking place there in New Orleans. And that is one of the things that said to me, we got to do this quietly and do it quickly. And that was the intent, and that's what we did.
Are you surprised to see how quickly this has escalated after Charlottesville? Because all of a sudden, we saw what New Orleans was doing, we saw what was happening in Memphis, but all of a sudden it is a groundswell of folks who are now targeting these Confederate monuments and statues.
Well, I think if one of the things that a mayor's role is to protect its citizens, to protect the public. And so I believe that what you're going to see is mayors taking it upon themselves to move forward. And I'm protected through our city charter, that if at any time I feel that the city is unsafe, that I have a right to protect the public. And so I exercise my right to protect the public.
What guidance would you give other cities when it comes to making these decisions? Because obviously there's the potential for protest, there's the potential for pushback as well.
Well, let me just say, I think in most cases we ought to be moving swiftly and quietly. But, you know, different cities, different situations. My concern, as you well know, was for my city, its safety. And I don't think you can sit around and ponder this. I don't think you need to listen to a whole bunch of folks. Understand your rights as one who is in charge of a city and move forward.
All right. Mayor Catherine Pugh of Baltimore, we appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin.
Folks, as I said to you, there are lots of things that are happening all across this country when it comes to monuments being removed. There's been an aggressive effort to target these various statues and memorials. The governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, is calling for the removal of all Confederate monuments in his state. This, of course, is after he previously had said, look, their history, leave them alone. In Virginia's capital of Richmond, the African-American mayor there is looking into removing Confederate statues in his city. Two plaques honoring Confederate General Robert E. Lee were removed from a church property in Brooklyn. Governor Andrew Cuomo now wants Confederate names removed from the streets of Brooklyn. Also in New York, Mayor Bill de Blasio said they are also going to be targeting all across the city, various monuments that are named after a number of different people. In fact, he also tweeted the targeting of one particular plaque there as well. In Hollywood, California, a 6'9" stone monument dedicated to Confederate war veterans no longer stands in a cemetery and will be given to the Long Beach chapter of the United Daughters of the Confederacy. And calls to remove even more statues in other cities are getting louder. In Memphis, Tennessee, state and local officials are thinking about removing a statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was a lieutenant governor in the Confederate Army. Also, folks, in other cities, some people are taking matters into their own hands. Vandals spray painted two Confederate statues and tried to pull them down in Wilmington, North Carolina. Officials in Tampa, Florida are trying to crack down on the vandalism. Guards are taking shifts watching over a Confederate monument at the courthouse there. Now, according to the New York Times, the red dots here on this map show statues that have been removed in L.A., San Diego, St. Louis, New Orleans, Louisville, Kentucky, Durham, North Carolina, Brooklyn, Baltimore, and three cities in Florida, St. Petersburg, Orlando, and Gainesville. The black dots represent proposals to remove monuments, including these in cities such as Helena, Montana, Dallas, San Antonio, Memphis, and Nashville, Tennessee, Lexington, Kentucky, Charlottesville, Annapolis, Maryland, Stone Mountain, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, and the Bronx in New York. Now, that sounds like a lot of statues gone, but keep in mind, there are more than 700 statues across the United States, and a total of 1,500 places named after Confederate leaders, which includes schools as well. Let's talk about this with our panel, Robert Petillo, Sue Zodak, Shermichael Singleton, as well as Barbara Arnwine. Folks, it's very interesting when you see what's going on in terms of this intense pressure. And more Americans are now realizing how ingrained the Confederacy, how ingrained these monuments have been in American society, and how it was accepted because no one understood how they got there.
Well, people have this mythology that somehow these statues were erected right after the Civil War.
It's a lie.
And it's just a lie. They were erected mostly between 1910 and 1940, when we, by the way, had the greatest period of lynching going on in this country. It was all done as a method of just terrorizing blacks back into submission during the era of Jim Crow. And people need to be very clear about this, and that the other big wave of these statues happened during the 1960s basically in rejection of the Civil Rights Act.
Well,
especially,
Robert, the renaming of all of these schools, that really took place after Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
Absolutely. It was a way to enforce the idea that even if you are now legally allowed to come to our school, just know who is still dominant in this idea. Remember that America never truly considered the Confederacy an enemy. They considered them to be a rebel province that was breaking away and needed to be brought back into the fold. This is why after the Civil War, they allowed Confederate generals and officers to keep their guns. They never imposed punitive measures as some nations have after a revolt. So they never considered the Confederacy truly to be an enemy, and that's why you see statues in Brooklyn, New York, and L.A., California, all around the country, not just in the South. I, however, don't think that the right method is to simply remove the statues. Leave the statue there. Expand it. Tell the whole story. If you want a statue of Robert E. Lee, have a statue right around it to the slaves.
Now,
have a statue right around it with whips and bondage and chains. The reason they left the ovens up in Auschwitz is so nobody would ever forget what happened. Let's not just tear down the statues and allow people to forget what actually went on in our country.
But Shermichael, the difference between, and I understand your point, but the difference between the ovens in Auschwitz and these monuments. That's a centrally located, that's a camp. What they've done here is the plan, and this was their plan. I mean, this was not haphazard.
No.
This was the plan to literally spread them all across the country.
Right.
And they were erected as a way of telling black folks, we're going to remind you who's in charge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the best comparison I always like to use is, imagine if Jewish individuals in Germany had to walk around and there were statues of Adolf Hitler and other Nazis.
Or the U.S.
They're not allowed.
Or in the U.S., or if their kids had to attend schools that were named after some of the worst people that were a part of the Nazi schemes, I think most people would find that to be appalling. So I think it's pretty reasonable to say we shouldn't have statues of people who were, one, oppressive to a sizable portion of folks that live within the country, and two, these folks were trying to revolt against the country. They were trying to break up the union. That's treasonous. So if you don't want to focus on race and you can purely focus on the constitutional act of trying to break up the country, which is an act of treason, and a long time ago you could be killed for doing something like that. So, I mean, I think those two arguments are legitimate enough in my mind to remove them.
So what is different here again, and I keep going back to this, Americans are wholly ignorant of history.
Well,
wholly ignorant. I mean, just not kind of ignorant, but wholly ignorant. These statues were the result of the Redeemer movement of the Democrats in the late 1800s and the Lily White movement of the Republican Party. They were erected literally in a 30 or 40 year span, 1890 to 1930, and it was a very clear design, and Americans are running around saying, oh, it's our heritage, it's our history. No, fool, there was a reason behind this.
Well, look, we're all here having a very intellectual and productive conversation here. I think the question is, exactly to what you're saying, where is the learning? Where is the conversation? Where is the history? It's one thing to go and spray paint, you know, on a monument. It's another, like you're saying, to teach people about history.
But they don't want that. They don't want it.
So you're giving up?
No. Hold on, Sue.
Where is the education?
In 398 years, black folks ain't never gave up.
Well,
so I mean, let's just be clear.
No. Here's ending the story.
No. Sue, out of all those stories we just did, two got spray painted. Out of all those stories, so you talk about spray. Sue, come on. My point is this here: the people who want to
none of them should be spray painted. That's just not a
damn by spray.
Hold up, that's just not a productive way to have a conversation.
Sue, if you're gonna focus on the spray painting, focus on the bigotry behind it.
I am.
And here's the whole point here. If you go to that building right there. Go to that building right there, the U.S. Capitol, and go in U.S. Statuary Hall. And you know what? You're not gonna see any explanation on the Confederate statues that are in that building. That building is
Sue,
follow me here. That building is supposed to represent freedom to the world. That building, and when you go in that building, do you realize that the senior statesman from Mississippi, the United States, I'm not done.
You don't have to lecture me about history.
Sue, the United States Senate of the United States passed a resolution in 1995 saying that the senior statesman from Mississippi will always use the desk of Jefferson Davis. Arguably, the greatest domestic terrorist, the greatest treasonist in American history. No, I'm not. Because follow me here. To say that if you are the senior senator from Mississippi, which is almost 50% black, and you are going to use the desk of Jefferson Davis, that is a monument. Just like, and his statue is in Statuary Hall. That is a statue. There are monuments to him all across this country. And what I'm saying is, there's no explanation, there's no plaque. He is lauded. The Senate literally passed the resolution. So tell me, the answer
is
get
answer?
Rid of that damn desk.
Okay.
The answer is, if you're in Mississippi, get rid of those two Confederate statues in the hall. The answer is remove every statue of a Confederate that sits in that building, because there is no way that building can represent freedom and democracy around the world if it's filled with racists who did not want people like me to even sit in that building.
I think Roland, it should be noted, because I have seen a lot of people have stated, well, where does this end?
What are the children learning?
I think we should be very clear that people who are advocating for Confederate monuments to be removed are not saying remove George Washington, remove Thomas Jefferson, because a lot of people are making that case. Well, if we allow them to remove these statues, then where will they stop?
And then, of course, like Larry Elder, who's saying,
well, since Dr. King was a Republican and he opposed gay marriage and he opposed abortion, let's remove his. They purposely want to muddy the water
to
take it away. That's what they
want
to do.
Make it very clear what we want removed and why.
But this is what I think happens when you remove the statues. In 50 years, you'll have people claiming that it never happened. You'll have people claiming that the Confederacy, slavery, everything else never happened. There was one in front of
them. Hold on. Robert, you said 50 years. Right now, in Texas, in Tennessee, in multiple states, they are changing the textbooks to do that. We ain't got to wait 50 years.
Okay.
These are not progressives or people of conscience. These are people who want the Confederate monuments. They want to deny that reality,
but keeping the monument.
No, but what we need people to do, a lot of people need to go to Berlin and walk the streets, because that's really instructive. When you go to Berlin, what you see is you don't see any monuments to Nazis.
And why is that? Why is that?
Because it's illegal.
It's against the law.
It's illegal.
Go ahead.
In most countries, it is illegal to engage in hate speech, illegal to engage in, Holocaust denial, illegal to venerate, traitors and et cetera. But what else is different is when you go to Berlin and you walk streets, it really chilled me. Is that they got plaque after plaque saying, here's where this massacre happened. Here's where our nation failed our people. I mean, it's everywhere.
And here's the deal, Robert.
That's what we don't have.
America does not want that, because America wants to deny its past, and folks like us, not going to let it happen.
And that's exactly why they carved Stone Mountain where they did, because it's the largest granite structure in the world. So at 10,000 years after our civilization is gone, that carving on Stone Mountain will still be there. There's no way to get it rid of it. It's indelible. So what I say you do
is... There's a reason they want it to be that way.
Exactly. And what I'm saying is you carve our story right next to it. If you want to have your statue
with
Robert E. Lee and everybody else, you carve the faces of people who were killed. You carve in the faces of the enslaved.
I do the flip side. Take that out and replace it. Okay? 20 seconds, I got to go break.
Well, the great-great-grandsons of...
Robert E. Lee.
Robert E. Lee, the great grandsons of Stonewall Jackson, came out today and wrote a letter to the public saying, take them down.
But here's
the
piece.
Take them all down.
I don't need to quote the family.
That's right.
Robert E. Lee said himself,
said,
don't build
them. Right.
All right, folks. Coming up next on News One Now, Donald Trump says he disbanded two of his economic advisory councils. That's a lie. They said, hell, we quit. Plus, military leaders are speaking out with words that contradict Trump, and that never happens. Uh-oh. Also ahead, the latest on the investigation to the brutal beating of a black man during the Charlottesville violence. Why are folks there not under arrest? 18 after the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
You're fired. Hell no, we quit. Yesterday, Donald Trump sent a tweet out saying that he was disbanding two of his economic councils because they were getting pressure. Oh, but now we know the real deal. Those CEOs said, player, we quit. Several of the CEOs said they chose to disband the Manufacturing Council and his strategy and policy forum before Donald Trump announced. In fact, one of the guys, Steve Schwartzman with BlackRock, called him and said, say, man, we done. We done with your panel. We out. Then he tweets, oh, I've decided to disband them. Really? Really? Why are you just going to lie? The CEOs, we believe them more than we believe you, Donald Trump. That's what's going on there. Also, folks, in terms of the military, they are also putting pressure on Donald Trump. Military leader after military leader blasting racism and white supremacy. Folks, it's amazing to watch what is going on. The top Navy Admiral, John Richardson, tweeted, events in Charlottesville, unacceptable. It mustn't be tolerated. U.S. Navy forever stands against intolerance and hatred. Four others, including the Commandant of the Marines, General Robert Neller, no place for racial hatred or extremism in USMC. Our core values of honor, courage, and commitment frame the way Marines live and act. Army Chief of Staff, General Mark Milley, the Army doesn't tolerate racism, extremism, or hatred in our ranks. It's against our values and everything we've stood for since 1775. The top Air Force General, David Goldfein, wrote, I stand with my fellow service chiefs in saying we're always stronger together is who we are as hashtag airmen. And top National Guard General Joseph Lingell tweeted, I stand with my fellow Joint Chiefs in condemning racism, extremism, and hatred. Our diversity is our strength. Hashtag National Guard. Ain't that interesting. Well, the president's chief strategist, folks, he is out with his comments, Steve Bannon. He says he didn't know if it was an interview. Y'all know he lying. You can't run a media company and say when you call a reporter who you don't know and talk to them for a long time that you don't know somebody's taking notes. Well, in this interview, Bannon said the Democrats, the longer they talk about identity politics, I got them. I want them to talk about racism every day. If the left is focused on race and identity and we go with economic nationalism, we can crush the Democrats. And also, one of Trump, also, first of all, in that same article, he also had some tough things to say about Trump, saying, ain't no military plan for North Korea. Don't exist. Thank you, President Bannon. Also, folks, one of Trump's lawyers, why are we shocked? Email this, Black Lives Matter has been totally infiltrated by terrorist groups. Sounds like J. Edgar Hoover and MLK as well. That's all it sounds like. And this guy has some other racist stuff to say as well. Let's go to our panel on this. It's pretty crazy here, folks. Look, it's very simple here. When you talk about to have CEOs and the military tell Donald Trump, you need to go sit down. Jermichael, that's not a small deal.
I mean, when you think about it from the perspective of CEOs, these are corporations that have boards. They have consumers who are extremely diverse. You have to answer to that board. You don't want to have the potential risk of potential groups saying we're going to protest your goods, which would impact the stock of a company. So yep. CEOs had to make the right choice.
And the stock price of Merck went up when Ken Frazier steps out.
Right, it did. And as it relates to generals, I mean, again, when parents send their kids to the military, they want to know, am I sending my child, my son or my daughter, to a place where they will have their values represented, where
right.
they won't be targeted because of who they are. And so the generals had to make a case, a strong case, that no, we don't tolerate racism, we don't tolerate bigotry.
Right.
Keep in mind, two individuals there, and there were far more, but we know for a fact two, were in the military, including the driver of the car.
Robert, even the head of the VA came out yesterday and made a strong statement against racism and bigotry.
Well, I think it's important that we also, all these people making statements, we say, beyond a statement, tell me what your actions are going to do. It's easy to condemn things. Tell me, for the CEOs, tell me what's your diversity initiative? What's your supply chain for minority companies? How many African Americans and minorities are sitting on your board of directors? If you really believe in what you're saying, show me with money. Keep the tweet to yourself. Show me the money.
So,
look, I love it when we allow our CEOs and our corporate entities to take a stand, like you're saying, and do what they think is right for the people. Likewise, they should be able to contribute to political campaigns because they're doing what they believe in. Those are the same
Sue, what is Sue, can you stay focused?
I am focused. You can't have it both ways.
Let them speak.
Yes, because. Let's talk about the other thing, employees.
Mm-hmm.
Employees in these companies, they raise hell.
when they don't know where their CEOs stand, if you've never been in one of these major corporations, then you're missing it. Because what they do is they start talking, they start writing on their internal, you know, landlines and all the rest of it, talking about what's going on. And so what is the problem is that these CEOs also, if you notice, they wrote letters to their employees
But it's not just them. It's also, again, with the military leaders.
Oh, yes.
It's institutions sending a signal to Donald Trump that what you said is foul, wrong, and not right.
No, but you can't have division in the Army. Remember, no, you can't be having friendly fire. You can't have friendly fire.
But these are military leaders who are actually,
yes,
and they didn't name them, but speaking out against the commander in chief.
Yes, I mean, I love that.
That's what's also, I think, significant and major. And now, answer, Michael, they'd already checked him on the transgender deal.
Yes.
But are they speaking out, or are they saying these are the values that our Constitution say we are to represent?
Sir Michael, that's
uphold, that we maintain.
There's a way for me to speak out. It's called suck. It's like we see you subtweet. They are subtweeting Donald Trump.
Yeah, they are.
And they subtweeted him on the transgender deal.
Yes.
And subtweeting him on this.
Yes.
And letting him know you might want to back up. Y'all, the Virginia man brutally beaten by an angry mob of white supremacists in Charlottesville says police officers did not bother to help him.
Unbelievable.
The video attack on 21-year-old DeAndre Harris went viral over the weekend. Harris says as the mob beat him, only one person tried to help him, and it wasn't a cop.
She talked to me and kept me calm and really kept me awake. I was fading and she waked me up and I was losing so much blood. Like, the people at the hospital told me I was lucky.
The investigators say they are still looking into the incident. How the hell, y'all? It's on video.
Right.
So far, only one person of interest has been identified. Authorities have not made any arrest. Oh, but the cops in Durham, North Carolina, they wasted no time arresting people in connection with pulling down a Confederate statue earlier this week. Takiyah Thompson is already charged with a felony and is now trying to get out of jail. Yesterday, police arrested and charged a 24-year-old man and a 35-year-old man for their roles in helping pull down the statue. What do? They use video to go after them. Joining us via Skype from Charlotte, North Carolina, is Bree Newsom. Of course, she is the activist who pulled down the Confederate flag off South Carolina's Capitol building in 2015. Bree, it's crazy to sit here and say no arrest in Virginia. They're on videotape. Send out an APB, slap a doggone a reward on there and say, turn these thugs in.
Yes, and thank you for having me. I think it's important to recognize this issue of Confederate monuments and systemic racism. It's directly connected to the issue of police brutality, and obviously that is another topic that has been in the news for quite some time. Obviously, we see a contrast between not only the treatment of protesters in Durham versus Nazis who were beating a black man in a parking garage in Charlottesville, but just the entire police response to the situation in Charlottesville compared to a situation like Ferguson. And something else I think it's important to understand about what is going on in Durham, this is not simply the police arresting people for pulling down a Confederate monument. This is really targeted retaliation against several organizers who have been protesting in that area for quite some time around people dying in police custody with the Durham County Sheriff's Department, conditions at the Durham County Correctional Facility. So, you know, it's tied to the Confederate monument, but obviously it's much deeper than that.
And when you also see, in terms of this brutality, now we see these racists who plan on basically having a tour going across this country. You have Steve Bannon who says, oh, I want Democrats to stay focused on this issue of identity politics and race. Because, again, this is all by design. I said in 2009, prepare for a 30-year war. And the reason I use that, it's because as America is becoming more minority,
yes,
you're going. This is all about white nationalism. And what I mean by that is, and not people who are wearing swastikas, who are out there carrying torches, but individuals who are afraid of how America is changing. That's the buttons Bannon is pushing and Trump is pushing.
Absolutely. You know, I would argue that this moment where we had the election of the nation's first black president, followed by the election of a white nationalist, is arguably the most significant domestic event since the Civil War. And there are obvious parallels. I mean, not simply the fact that we're still debating the cause of the Civil War and whether or not we should have monuments to the Confederacy. But this racist backlash that we have seen since the election of Obama that has intensified pretty much every year since is a reaction to exactly what you're talking about. Not simply that, you know, a black man was elected president, but all the conditions that made it possible for him to be elected president, right? All of the benefits that have come about as the result of the civil rights movement of the 60s, the shifting demographics and attitudes in the country. And so what we have had happen with the Trump administration is a clear agenda that is about undoing not just everything that Obama did and represents, but really trying to undo the civil rights movement. I mean, they are clearly trying to take us back to like 1954.
All right. Bree Newsom, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Next on News One Now, thousands gather to celebrate the life of Heather Heyer. We'll share their powerful words of grief and determination. Also on the show, why did Donald Trump cut funds for groups fighting extremists like those in Charlottesville? We'll chat with Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver of Kansas City. This is News One Now on TV One.
So you want the truth? Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Quite the emotional memorial service on yesterday for 32-year-old Heather Heyer. She was the white woman killed when a white supremacist, James Alex Fields, intentionally drove his car into counter-protesters on Saturday in Charlottesville. More than 1,000 supporters, politicians, and clergy gathered at the Paramount Theater in Charlottesville to hear family and friends eulogize Heyer.
Amazing grace.
Did I ever tell you how much I loved you? Heather, when my children ask me who I admire most, I will tell them you, my baby cousin, who is larger than life and too good for this world. Did I ever tell you how much you taught me? That you don't have to be a world leader, Nobel Prize winner, or CEO to change the world. Just be one person willing to show compassion to another.
No father should have to do this. But I love my daughter. And as I look out on you guys, you loved her too. She was kind of hard that way. It's hard not to love.
I pray and ask that our world somehow, some way, can sit here and feel that love that she had. I mean, she believed in each and every one of us. I would ask any of you, take time for the next few days, for the rest of your life, and please just reach out your hand to somebody you don't know. Touch them, tell them thank you, tell them hi.
As you live your days, as you reflect, as you commemorate, as you celebrate her life, then you need to learn from her, and that is, make each day count, because she lived her life supporting and believing and having a value that enabled her to fight for justice and righteousness. And I know this has been a heavy blow to our community, and yes, haters have been here. Yes, they don't ought not. We don't want them here. But we need to take a higher road. And we need to let them know that the three lives that were lost this weekend will not be in vain. And one of the ways you can make them not be in vain is to make sure that you do use your life and get the most out of it by touching another life.
My child's famous Facebook post was, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. She paid attention. She made a lot of us pay attention. And I think the reason that what happened to Heather has struck a chord is because we know that what she did is achievable. We don't all have to die. We don't all have to sacrifice our lives. They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her. She was a firm believer in whatever she believed. And let's do that. Let's find that spark of conviction. Let's find in ourselves that action. Let's spread this. Let's have the uncomfortable dialogue. We are going to have our differences. We are going to be angry with each other. But let's channel that anger not into hate, not into violence, not into fear, but let's channel that difference, that anger, into righteous action. I'd rather have my child, but by golly, if I got to give her up, we're going to make it count.
And last night, hundreds of people attended a candlelight vigil on the campus of the University of Virginia, where the protest took place to honor those killed and injured during the weekend violence there. So again, it was quite emotional there. People are showing exactly where they stand and how they are clear they're going to be against racism and bigotry. Coming up next on News One Now, the Trump administration looking the other way when it comes to white terror groups in the U.S. We'll chat with Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver of Kansas City. Plus, we'll talk to former NBA star Jason Williams. He's in the house to talk about an alcohol and drug rehab institution he co-founded with former NBA player Charles Oakley. It is 20 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, Donald Trump is always talking about Islamic terrorism. So guess what's happening here? They are shifting funds away from the fight against white domestic terrorism towards Islamic terrorism, as if both don't exist. Now, the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, reports from 2007 to 2016 that were in America, need y'all to hear me, 372 deaths by domestic terrorists. 74% were at the hands of right-wing extremists and white supremacists. Follow me here, y'all. White domestic terrorists have killed more people in this country. Let me explain to y'all again. White domestic terrorists have killed more people in America than Muslims. Mm-hmm. Let that sink in. The Trump administration decided to cut federal funding for groups fighting violent domestic terrorism. The Department of Homeland Security claimed it wanted to evaluate whether the groups receiving funds were helping stem hate group violence and recruiting efforts. This summer, DHS revised its list of recipients, cutting them down, way down. According to Reuters, the White House was more concerned with the threat of radical Islamic extremism than white supremacist groups. Joining us right now is Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver via FaceTime from Kansas City. Congressman, so we see what happened in Charlotte. Another person killed. We've seen what has happened all across the country with a black man who was killed in New York as he was walking down the street with a sword. And you hear these stories, and the Trump folks go, let's focus on those Muslims.
I think we have a sickness in the country right now. As horrible as the words were that fell from Donald Trump's lips, let me tell you what's worse, and that is cutting the funding that was set aside, initiated by President Obama. And the first thing is that, according to the New York Times, the Donald Trump asked his staff on just about every issue, where was President Obama, so that he can go the opposite direction. So they're cutting funding, even though the Defense Department warned the president and the entire federal government, for that matter, months ago, that we could expect violence from right-wing, race-baiting hate groups. And if anything, this was the time for the president to come to Congress with an emergency request for funding. He came to us for an emergency request to build a $1.3 billion piece of a wall. So I think that, you know, what he's saying is horrible. But I think it's important for us to also keep up with what he is doing, mm-hmm. which is far more deadly than what he's saying.
And the fact that they were warned is what is important. And look, the president could have very easily spoken about this threat on Saturday or a couple of days ago, but he chose not to. In fact, he chose to coddle these white supremacists.
Well, the president has a hole in his soul, and it's so sad that he is giving comfort. And I was sick to my stomach in reading all of the praiseworthy statements made by people like David Duke on how great Donald Trump was for siding with them. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I think is important, and you talked about it in your talk yesterday morning, one of the tragedies is that, you know, you gave us a charge, all of us, and I think the Congressional Black Caucus is ready. I mean, I think every one of us, maybe except one, would vote to censure the president. Keep in mind, the president has already cut money to discontinue the training of lawyers in the Justice Department and HUD, who actually go out and file charges against people using Title VI of the Fair Housing Act. So he very cleverly, and in some cases, without public knowledge, he's doing little things
right
to undermine equality in this country.
Right. Congressman Manuel Cleaver, always a pleasure having you. Thank you so very much.
Good to be with you. Thank you for your preaching.
All right. Well, you know, somebody got to say it. Thanks a bunch. And that's coming from a preacher who's also an alpha man. Congressman, thanks a lot.
Good to be with you.
Quickly, let's go to our panel here. Sue, I'll start with you. It's crazy to shift that money away when it's a problem in America.
First of all, I'm just going to say being a Republican does not make me a racist, and I'm not condoning anything that's
happening. Why you got to qualify it?
Because there's people out there who are equivocating the two things.
Oh, hell, so, people calling Democrats racist as well. So they call them Black Lives Matter racist. Girl,
so
just talk.
But it's important to clarify the facts. These cuts did not happen in real time this weekend. There was a decision made back in May to reevaluate the efficacy of the tax dollars being spent, and they went back to the programs and said, you have to come up with a way to prove the results of your program. And this was something that happened in May. Okay, and the news is making it seem like this is a decision that Donald Trump made this
weekend. Real quick. Don't try that, the new stuff. We discussed this earlier. So this ain't new for us.
This is from May.
Sue, let me help you. This ain't new for us.
Okay.
It might be new for the other people. But you ain't got to clarify because the audience know how
I
roll.
Are you going to let me talk or are you just worried about
No, no, no. I want you to understand that when you say the news,
all right.
That's
we're
them.
Off topic again.
On
okay.
this, no, no.
It's about you.
No, you're absolutely right. It is about my news.
You're right.
And I'm about to reclaim my time.
Okay.
My audience knows very well what we talk about. Now, everybody else was late, but not on News One Now. Shermichael, real quick.
I mean, look, as a Republican, I was in government. When you look at where you're going to cut things, you quantify what's working, what is not working. Does it make sense to spend money on this versus that? If the numbers indicate that we have more domestic terrorism within the country, you need to figure out a way to spend money to combat that. So I disagree with Sue. That sounds ridiculous to me because it happened in May. We shouldn't focus on it now. You sound crazy. And I mean that in the most respectful way.
That's not what I said.
That just sounds absurd
to me. Let's not make it seem like
that's not what he said. His premise, his initial question to you was, why should we not also focus on this when this is more of a problem than
these were grants
radical
that haven't
Islamic
been given
terrorism.
Out yet. Okay, it's not cutting funds. It's reevaluating grant recipients before
Sue,
they've even gotten the money.
Did you do research into this before you came here today?
Yeah, it's
are you sure?
money that hasn't been handed out.
Wait a minute, are you sure?
Yes.
Because I did. And I talked to friends at Homeland Security because I do my homework before I come on television. And I can assure you, those funds are being misappropriated, in my view, to focus on
I didn't say
to
that
focus
this
on
is
radical
right
Islamic terrorism, which is a serious issue. I'm not negating that fact. But what I'm saying is domestic terrorism is also an issue, and we should spend the resources to combat it.
You and I are saying two completely different things.
No, I don't think we're saying two completely different things.
No, we are.
I think you're saying the wrong thing.
Right. Nope. I'm just saying we're making it seem like we snatched money out of people's hands to give it to another. These are checks that hadn't been cut yet.
No.
These applications hadn't been approved.
Sue, the funds are being appropriated to combat radical Islamic terrorism. Roland's point is we should also spend funds to combat domestic terrorism.
I agree with that. These are all grants are in the paperwork process.
So the paperwork process means what, Sue?
That they haven't been, it's not like
$1 million
and then
Barbara, hold on.
But
where are the funds going, Sue?
They've
already evaluated, Sue. They've already evaluated.
It's the current administration's right to reevaluate something.
No one's negating. No one is.
The last 10 days
Sue, nobody. Obama's irrelevant to this. That's an odious comparison. Nobody is bringing up the president's ability to look at something and say, is this working? Does this make sense to the taxpayers?
That's all they're doing.
Sue, the funds have already been changed to combat radical Islamic terrorism versus domestic terrorism.
Those programs showed efficacy, just like you said, and the others didn't.
You looked at the numbers?
Yes.
So what do the numbers indicate?
There's $900,000 here, $400,000.
Not the expenditures. The numbers as it relates to domestic terrorism in comparison to radical Islam.
Look, I already agree with you that
the appropriation is not current
to what is happening in society. What I have an issue with is mischaracterizing the government as doing the wrong thing by wanting to evaluate how taxpayers...
They have already evaluated. They have already appropriated the funds to combat radical Islamic terrorism.
Combating something doesn't mean that they are. You have to prove it. You can't just say,
This is ridiculous. Here's what I'm going to do. Okay, hold up. So I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take a break.
Please pay me.
Okay, I'm going to take a break. You got 60 seconds to do a reset. Then I want you to come back and answer his question. This was good. I ain't had to say nothing. I'll be back.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
We back.
Okay.
Go ahead, Sue.
No. Okay. What I just asked you off the air when we were commercial break is, do you have proof that any of these programs that had their funding cut, as you say,
It's not what I say, it's what the facts say. What do you mean what I say?
I just asked you. So answer the question. Were these programs able to prove that they were efficient? Do you have proof that they did that and that they were denied money?
Let me make this clear because you've never been in government. So let me explain this to you, how this works because it's obvious to me that they could prove that they were efficient with tax dollar money. Let me explain this to you because clearly you don't get how government works because I was in government briefly. When you look at a program, even if a program can show you provable empirical data that yes, this works, but that is not your priority, you can shift those funds. You do realize that, correct?
I agree that that's possible.
It's not possible.
But I'm asking you about the specific ones that were cut, whether you have proof that they were able to show that they were efficient. You don't have proof of that. So we're combining what you want, your wish list of what you think government wants, and trying to clash with the facts.
What I think what government wants is what I think makes logical sense as far as taxpayers' dollars.
Exactly.
And as someone who's been in government,
who has some experience with how these things operate,
more so than you. Let me finish. Every new administration comes in with their own priorities. They look case by case, and they look case by case at what the previous administration was doing.
And if it's not a priority
to the existing administration, regardless of whether or not it works or not, they will change the priority, which is exactly what this administration has done as it relates to this particular issue.
I agree with you. That's possible, but you're telling me it's possible.
So you sound crazy. We can't even have this conversation because you sound ludicrous. So I'm not even going to waste my time debating this with you.
Barbara, real quick, then Robert, I'm going to break. Go.
First of all, in February, the Department of Justice realigned where they were going to investigate white supremacist groups. They took them off of their priority list. They de-emphasized them.
It wasn't in sync with what they wanted to focus on.
That was the first thing. So the second thing is some of these groups, like the group in Chicago, had already been receiving funds. They were cut in the middle of their funding cycle. I just want, you know, let's get the facts on the table. The last thing is, everybody please read the speech from Frederick Douglass about how you deal with a treacherous president. Please. Well,
Robert, about 20 seconds, go.
This is exactly why I said that tweets don't matter, statements don't matter. Jeff Sessions can say all he wants about condemning white supremacy, condemning these groups. When you take the money away from these people, that's what really matters. I'm tired of seeing statements. Yes. Where are the dollars at? Where are the dollars flowing to? What are we really prioritizing in this country?
Make my funk the P-Funk. All right. I'll be back. 60 seconds. News 1-9 TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
All right, folks. I was going to talk to Jason Williams today live. We're going to shoot him in about 3 minutes, and we're going to run that on Monday's show. Of course, we got a special coming up tomorrow as well here. And I'll be in Atlanta tomorrow for the Hank Aaron Social Justice Award. Cito Gaston is being honored, along with Alexis Herman and Hank Thomas, one of the original Freedom Riders, and yours truly. And so I will have our cameras there, so we'll bring it to you. We'll also be trying to live stream that, so you want to go to my Twitter feed, my Facebook page, and YouTube channel. Y'all know how I roll. I got to go. Y'all have a great one.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.